Oh, that's oh so beautiful. And am I mistaken, or is that an original song that you wrote? It's the first song you ever wrote. Wow. I think you should be well known for that first song you ever wrote. Every time I've heard you sing it, it's just so beautiful. And thank you for selecting it for the message I'm delivering today, because I got something to say today. She's blaming it on God. That power that's greater. Good morning. Welcome to the West Valley Center for Spiritual Living. I'm Reverend Karen Rice, and I am the spiritual leader of this community, and so happy to be here, even on a holiday weekend. My son is in Los Angeles with his family. They have a RV, and they're at the beach, and yesterday they were interviewed by Channel 9 News. And so you'll have to peek at Hugh's Facebook page, because he posted the little interview. The really handsome young man is our son. And so I'm a little envious. He's having a relaxing weekend at the beach, and it is a weekend where we memorialize, where we remember those who have passed. And we certainly have some tender things that have happened recently here in our community, but I also find with a very heavy heart that if you have not heard, our sister church, Creative Living Fellowship, CLF, out in Phoenix, lost their beautiful Reverend Lonnie last week. So Reverend Michelle Whittington is the spiritual leader of that community. She led that community along with her husband, who's also a minister, Reverend Lonnie. And that community is really, it happened very quickly, and so they are really needing our love and our support. I think we'll put something on the prayer wall, and I just would remind you all to just cradle them up, because when a community has to walk through something like that, it's difficult. They're going to be having a memorial service on June the 15th, and our gift to Reverend Michelle, at her request, is that she doesn't want the memorial service at her center, so we'll be doing it at New Visions, and they are looking for us to sort of throw the show. So I threw our name in the hat and said my community would be happy to help in whatever way they need, so they'll be looking for greeters and food and, all that stuff. If you are interested in all in participating in any way, let me know so that we can show some good support and be there to just love our community. CLF is unique in that they are not affiliated with Centers for Spiritual Living. They are an independent religious science church, and Michelle has been their leader for more than 20 years, 25 years or something. So this will be a hard time for them. And I thought it was appropriate to mention that now. I hate to drop that to you at the end of the service, and then we're all sad. I want you to hope to uplift you with the message today in addition to that. So I picked a clever title. The title of my message is 51%. And I really like that title, because 51% is a reference that the founder of this teaching, the Science of Mind, Ernest Holmes, 100 years ago published the very first Science of Mind book. And he's a very prolific author. He's been published a lot. And in that book, Creative Mind, in 1918, he said this: "An hour a day spent in meditation will not save us from the confusion of life. The 51% of our thinking is what counts. We bring out possibilities when we allow our thoughts to run in long hours that stretch into days and months and years." 51%. So he's speaking here about a way we can groom our thinking. We can pay attention to our minds and what we think, what information we take in, and create a tendency of thought that puts us above that 51% measurement, you might say. So at 50%, you have average. And anytime we put our mind on spiritual matters, we are rising above that middle place. Because there is a law of averages that exists in so many ways in the world. And we don't have to settle for average. And I think that each and every spiritual tradition, all the different religions, seem to strive to communicate that there is a spiritual truth that can inspire us and uplift us even as we move through some of the difficult challenges of life, such as remembering those who have passed. So, the other way that Ernest Holmes uses this idea of 51%, we'll be talking about both of these ideas this morning, is that we are also influenced not only by what we think, but we're impacted by the general consensus of thought that's out there in the world. In fact, he goes so far as to say all the thought that's ever unfolded in the world, and we bump into that. But that's the middle. I see it like a cloud. That's always the way, when I think about, he calls it race consciousness, meaning the general consciousness of the human race. I always say John Q. Public. You know, if you're just kind of normal and you don't have any special inspiration or gifts that you know of or whatever, you're just living with everybody else, then that's what you get, is what's there. When I, on the other hand, make a conscious effort to remember spiritual truth every day before I leave the house, when I choose what I want to study spiritually speaking and who I like to rub elbows with, people that will inspire me and encourage me, now I can see that I'm rising above that cloud, and though I am still impacted by all that thought that what everybody else thinks, it based on what our beliefs are, I can rise above that a little bit. So in a way, it gives us a higher perspective, and that's why I think I like the idea of using that 51%. We're not talking here about a critical mass, that we need so many people to think this way for everything to be okay on the planet. That's a different teaching. We're not talking about a tipping point when we're talking about 51%. But we are talking about rising above the law of averages. And you know, this year, 2018, all of the Centers for Spiritual Living are celebrating this 100 years of this teaching being a valid spiritual teaching on the planet. And I looked for the month of May, and I mentioned this earlier in the month, the specific theme for the month of May is spiritual laws and how to use them. And so the laws that I'm talking about today, this is the law of creativity. We're talking about the creative process. We're talking about living intentionally. And what we know is that when we live our lives intentionally, our lives change, that there is this process of living that gives us a sense of empowerment, where we don't feel like victims to the world around us. In this section in the book, Ernest Holmes said, it's actually a subheading under the word, and Holmes is talking about how powerful the word is, that the word is all powerful. He says, even in thy own mouth, the word is all powerful. It is the word that every man and every woman seeks, yet few realize. It is every word we think, every word we hear, every word we speak. So think about that. Everything you hear or you read, or whether you agree, whether you disagree, every thought that you have stimulates thought. It stimulates more thought. You're thinking right now, aren't you? Right? And whatever you're thinking about, it could be something I've said, or it could be something completely not related to this, or maybe something I said that led you to think of something else about your own spiritual commitment. You know, it doesn't matter. But that thinking is stimulating thought, and that thought is creating an atmosphere. And you are living now in an atmosphere of thought that you've created. Hopefully, I'm helping create it, but you're living in your own atmosphere of thought. So there's a lot of different things going on in this room right now, because we're not all having the same thought. But what we teach and what we know is so important is that thoughts are things. Thoughts are alive. Thinking is an activity. It is a movement in consciousness. It is our mind at work. And our thoughts have creative energy. Thoughts have a power that fuels the tendency of our life that will, and our life, by the way, will reveal our beliefs, because all of that is true. So when we chew on something, you got a thought in your mind and you can't get it out of your mind and you're thinking on it, you're ruminating on it, it doesn't matter if it's good or it's bad, it's creating an energetic atmosphere that then is the life that you're living. So we are constantly, it's so kind of funny, but we are constantly creating an atmosphere, and then we're living in that atmosphere that we just created, whether we're aware of it or not. And I don't think we can talk about this enough, because it's just sort of interesting to observe how often we're not living the life we we think we want to be living. And, you know, there's a simple solution to that. Stop it. You know, quit doing whatever that is and align yourself to some new thoughts that will create a different kind of energetic that will put you in a more positive atmosphere, or a more promising, or a more inspiring, or a more productive tendency of thought. So, you know, it's funny that sometimes we just think we're stuck with what we got. You know, I'm short. Well, I've been married a long time. Well, it's hot in Arizona. You know, we think we're just stuck with stuff. But the truth is, precedent is not principle. That's a sub-theme this morning. Precedent is not principle. In other words, whatever's happened to me and whatever experiences I have moved through, I'm not stuck with those. I can now plant some new seeds. I can create some new thoughts that will change my perspective, that will change the atmosphere that I am creating as my own life, and things can change. In fact, things are always changing. The only question is, how much are we participating? So I had an experience recently. Some of you know this. Hugh and I have been living, isn't it sweet he's here? Oh, I love you, honey. yeah, just stay to the talk, Karen. Hugh and I moved into the home that we're living in about 3 years ago, right at 3 years ago. And it was one of those funny moves. I don't know that everybody's had this experience, but we've had it twice, and it's not the best ideal moving arrangement. But when we got to Arizona, we bought this house, but we didn't move into it. My daughter moved into it. We were living in her house. Everything seemed fine. We were going to live happily ever after. But we knew this would be our home eventually. And then she got ready to buy another house. And then suddenly, we found ourselves in this position of moving. But when you move into a home that your family occupies, they don't get all their stuff out first. It's not a very nice way to move, you know? So you're kind of juggling things here and there, trying to find a place to shove all this stuff I don't want. And so we moved in, and I selected a room to be my office. Now, the office in our house is very important to me because I spend a great deal of time there, and I like to feel good in my office. But the room that I chose was my beautiful granddaughter Annabelle's bedroom, and it was a perfect little girl's bedroom. It was all bright pink and pretty. There was a mural on one wall that I put my bookcases over to cover right away, and I was kind of stuck with that pink because I had to set my office up right away. And then once you get all your office stuff in there, well, what room in the house would be worse to paint than that? And probably none in my house. So I felt like I was stuck with it. It's like, oh, people would come and see how great my office looks, and I would apologize for the paint. Somebody called it, it was you, Nancy, Pepto-Bismol pink. And it's true, I didn't like that color, and I did not feel comfortable in that setting. And it wasn't like I ever got used to it. I always didn't like it. And so there was a kind of a continual way that I would feel unhappy or discontented. And I would always say that we're going to paint this room one day. I had no idea what color, but I'm going to paint this room someday. But, you know, I never set it like a goal. I set it like something on my bucket list. Like, I sure hope before I die, I get rid of that pink paint, you know? And it just didn't occur to me, even though every Sunday I deliver this message, it didn't occur to me how much discontent the pink walls brought to my life. And then one day I started waking up to it, and I thought, well, I've never painted before. It's going to be a big job. But maybe I could do that. Maybe I could even get some help. So the first thing I did was I went out to Home Depot, and I just looked at paint colors, you know, the little cards with all the paint colors. And I brought home several swatches, and it was really easy for me to begin to see what colors I was drawn to, the kind of colors I thought I could sit in comfortably that would bring me pleasure. Then the next thing, I did that for about a month. I just played with all those little cards. And then a month later, I went back and I bought the paint. I took the big step and I bought the paint. And I was kind of embarrassed because I knew nothing. I just, you know, I didn't know, do I have to put primer on the wall? I knew nothing, but I kind of acted like I did. You know, this is the color and the bedroom's this big and it's got this big a window and blah, blah, blah. And then the paint sat in the garage for a while. And then finally, one day, because I was gentle with myself in the way I approached the task, I just had this urge. And I decided, you know what, on Tuesday, I'm going to take, oh, I had to go back one more time to get all the supplies I needed. I'll go, on Tuesday, I'll go buy the rest of the supplies. So I walked in and said, I have no idea what I need. They sold me a drop cloth. They sold me brushes and rollers. They even sold me this cute little plastic thing to put on the top of the can to make it easier to pour the paint, you know, and I'm all in it. I get the ladder out, and I think, and I can only paint one wall at a time because I have so much stuff in the office. So I set out to tape off that first wall after I moved all the furniture out or away from the wall. And I just did it. I just did it. Over time, I did a little piece here and a little piece there, except for there's something really exciting about painting, isn't there? Now, personally, I hope I never do it again. It was like really hard work. I think it was more than I realized. And but I will say that it was so satisfying that the day that I got it all taped off, I couldn't stand it. I wanted to see what the color would look like on the wall. So I started painting that very day, even though I was ahead of schedule. And then the thing about painting is that once you put that color on the wall, it's just you're just in love with it. It becomes so exciting to experience that transformation. And so I painted my office. I created an entirely new atmosphere in there. And now every time I walk in there, I'm so pleased. You know, there's a piece of it's like, woo, I did it all by myself. And that's kind of good. And I know where all the mistakes are, but I don't even mind. And I'm just pleased when I go in there. I created a beautiful environment for myself to work in. And it brings me pleasure. So now, what happens to the tendency of my thought while I'm sitting in that space? What kind of an atmosphere of thought am I stirring when I go in there and I'm so pleased with how it feels? I've created a whole new atmosphere. So we are all responsible for the choices we make, and the choices we make do create the atmosphere, and we are always participating in every aspect of that. We are always creating, my friends. We are always creating something. You might as well be intent on what you'd like to create. 100 years ago, Ernest Holmes, Dr. Holmes, published this first book, Creative Mind. He was 31 years old. That's a lot for me to think about. A 31-year-old man who had really devoted his life already to spiritual matters. But he had the gall to write in this book that quote that I read you at the top of the message, where he said, 51% of your thinking is what matters. 31 years old, and he had that brilliant ability to observe that. And then he began writing these ideas that eventually produced this transformational teaching that we still find so relevant today. He's 31 years old, and he sees there is a way to create a practical spirituality that's not so religious. He found a way to have simple spiritual tools, affirmative prayer in a distinct method that he would go on later to create. It's sort of mathematical, 51%. And see, when I think of 51%, that means I don't have to do it all the time. I don't have to be hard on myself when I don't live a perfect life. You know, I don't have to beat myself up or berate myself when I fall short of living up to the standards that I desire to live to, because all I have to do is get halfway up above the averages and I have a higher perspective. And your life is different from that look, from that place of looking out. That's the place where you know it doesn't matter what's happened before in your life, that today is a new day, that this is the day the Lord has made, and we can rejoice in it. So I think it's fair to say that there is something about human nature. In psychology, they would explain it's the way our human psyche tries to spare us from having too much guilt or too much self, you know, inflicted pain. So we use these diversions of guilt and shame and blame, pointing the finger. We scapegoat, think that of ways that things happen, that it's not my fault, it was somebody else's fault. And we spend time wishing things were different than they are. I wish that room wasn't pink. But all the wishing in the world didn't change the color of that room. I wished I had had time to paint before we moved in, but that wasn't possible. I wished I had enough money to just pay somebody to come and do it for me. I could just go to work one day and come home and it'd be done. But all I was doing was wishing. It wasn't until I actually started envisioning what it would be like to not be so irritated. This is a time where you look at the discordance. This no longer feels good. And I'm tired of not feeling good in my sacred space. So I'm going to do something about it. And then you start moving into action. You start changing the atmosphere of your thoughts with great intention so that you can create the environment that you desire to create. See, the risk with this teaching, this always makes me a little nervous about new thought and any metaphysical approach to scriptural understanding, is that we're very quick to turn it against us. We're quick to see that, oh yeah, look, this works. Look at that example. Look, I did this and that happened. I get it. This stuff works. But then when you move through an experience where you're really uncomfortable in the experience, it's a greater challenge or something that you don't want, we're very quick to stop and go, well, what did I do to manifest this? I would ask you, please don't waste your time there. Please don't waste your time there. What did I do to manifest this is an okay starting point, but it's still putting blame on yourself. It is not setting yourself free. It is really different than saying, wow, that didn't feel good. Now, how can I do it different? How can I proceed? How can I wake up today in a whole new atmosphere of thought with a whole new tendency of choice I have to make for myself? So when we get stuck believing we've done something wrong, Holmes says that we are actually compounding our misfortune. We are making what's wrong more wrong. It's like rubbing your own nose in it instead of getting over it, or worse yet, rubbing somebody else's nose in a choice they made, which I guess is the exception to that is partnership. If you're married or have a partner, I think sometimes it's appropriate to let them know your way might have been better. So you know, think about that. I really want you to be thinking and noticing what happens to you when you get your aha and you realize, I do have the power to make this different. I can turn that pink into teal. I got that power, right? I can do that. And I did it uniquely my way, and so do you. So will you all the time. So when you, if you're not living up as high as you want to be living, please stop picking on yourself. Don't use this teaching against yourself. Instead, choose the atmosphere of thoughts that create feelings you would rather experience and then linger there. Be there in that space of the desires of your heart, because those desires are God-given desires. So listen carefully here. That is not to say God desired those walls not to be pink, right? That's not what I'm saying here. God doesn't care what color the office is, or how what my high heels look like, or you know, who my partner is. None of that matters. What matters are the God qualities. And I do believe that we are created by this fabulous intelligence that desires for us to have pleasure in our lives, for us to have feelings of good and feelings of joy, and for us to be able to recognize the beauty of the natural order in the universe and all those things like that. Somebody asked Ernest Holmes once, what do you think we're here for? Why do you think God made people? And he said, I think that God made people for, I think we're here for the delight of God. Yes. Isn't that beautiful? So why not create an atmosphere? You know, we are an individualized expression of the divine. So we have a minister in our movement who wrote a book called Giving God a Good Time. You know, so can you give God a good time by having an atmosphere of thought in your life that works in a positive way for you? Listen to these words that come from the Science of Mind textbook. I just did all Holmes today. I got all Holmes excited about Holmes. So just love it along with me. It's the easiest way through it. On page 300, I only tell you the page number when I think it's important. You know that, right? On page 306 of the Science of Mind textbook, it's one of those pages in my book that is well marked both sides. Holmes says this: what we demonstrate today, tomorrow, and the next day is not as important as the tendency which our thoughts take. The dominant attitude of your mind is what matters. If every day things are a little better, if your life is a little more harmonious, if your life is a little more health-giving, if each day we express more life, we are going in the right direction. Let me hear an amen. We are going in the right direction. So that doesn't mean that every day you're going to be top of the world. It means that you got tools to move through the days that don't feel as good as other days. So when we are talking about Holmes' view of the law of averages, or that idea of 51%, I want you to realize that there's a lot going on in the world that's not your thought. For instance, how easy is it to fall into a conversation where somebody goes, oh, the times are so hard now. Money is tight. Don't you just think all the kids are so self-centered today, these days? The price of gas figures. We're getting ready to travel and the price of gas goes up again. It's so easy to fall into agreement on topics like that when there are so many other things we could be talking about that make us feel good and not weighted down by the world and by stuff. Now, we know that our thoughts influence how we feel and based on what we believe, but we also are influenced by what other people believe. So know what you believe. Know where to stand. Know how to do a little ballet dance through those conversations where you don't take on the sadness or the worry or whatever you need to uplift yourself. I don't think it means we need to go around trying to make the world sweeter and be Pollyanna. I think it means that we make positive choices that help us feel solid where we stand instead of worried about all the negativity in the world. That is a real key point, and I think it's tricky to figure out how to do that, but that's what we're here to talk about and to teach. So the way I think about that collective unconscious, the way that it impacts my life, the way that I can slide into it without even knowing. I can start worrying about something that's not even mine to worry about because it's heavy in the ethers, right? A lot of people are worrying about the same stuff. Well, I think about the way a group thinking can change us or impact us in a positive way. You know, if you go to a concert, if you go to a rowdy rock and roll concert, well, never mind. How did Timber say that? Know your audience. But if I go to a Tina Turner, wow, Tina Turner's great. Who else other than me has seen Tina Turner? Okay, good. That makes me feel good. Yeah, Tina Turner is great. You know you're going to go have a good time. You know it's going to be loud. You know you're going to dance. You know you're going to feel good. And everybody there is there for that same reason, hopefully. If you go to a sporting event, you expect to get caught up in the energy of all the fans so that you can have a rip-roaring good time at that, the sporting event. And if you go to a prayer circle, you are going because you want to have that experience of feeling that energetic of that sacred words of prayer. Or sitting in silence with other people that want to sit in silence. So there's something wonderful about what we can do together in a group. And I would say, because I've been thinking, because it's Memorial Day, or weekend, day? Weekend, that I love the 4th of July. And I have only a few times in my life been treated to sit in a stadium somewhere where you're with a bunch of fans and you sit in the bleachers and then after there's some kind of show and after dark the fireworks are magnificent. And at the grand finale, they start playing the Star Spangled Banner and everybody's on their feet. And I promise you, I cannot be in that environment without crying. It's just so beautiful. And I don't know that I'm all that patriotic, but I love being in that environment and for a moment honoring the beautiful things that I have benefited my life because I'm a citizen of this country. And I'm sitting here with all these other people that are feeling that way at the same time. And so I don't think we should I don't want you to miss the spectacularness of those great, great moments of what happens when we come together with like-minded people, because there's some great stuff happening here. I've been working personally on practicing the presence. There's a magnificent book that I think I might bring for a discussion group one day, called Presence, and it's written by a group of people. It's one of the best books I've ever read. I got it when I was in ministerial school, so it's been around a while, but it's written by Peter Singh and Otto Scharmer and Betty Jo Flowers and some other guy, Jarkowski or something, and it's like just a discussion where they're sitting and talking about what the presence is. And so we talk about practicing the presence, about being in the present moment. And I have little tricks in my life to pull me in to live in the present moment at the grocery store. Just smell the cilantro for a minute. You don't even have to buy it. Just smell it. Oh, it's such a full experience, you know, or the grapefruit. Or at home when you're washing your hands, And the water is running over your hands, and you can just feel how beautiful that water feels on your skin. You know, it's about being really in relationship. So it's not just about practicing the presence with another person, which is so powerful. It's a beautiful way to show up with each other, to really be there, you know, when you're with somebody. But it's about realizing there is a relationship we are encountering with everything, not just everyone, everything, every experience, every condition, every thought that moves through our mind is about relationship. And when we begin to understand that, we will begin to see the unity of all of life. We will begin to see that there are not two separate things. There's not this and that. There's not me and you. There's union. There's unity. There's wholeness. And that's what the study of oneness is all about. So how you relate to life has this way of helping you understand us, but I'm going to call it usness. I think that's a gorgeous thing for us to practice and to look to be in relationship with, usness, the way we are all in that one part of that great whole. And so I wanted to close this morning with a quote that's from Otto Scharmer. And he says this, and I love this quote because when Timber Hawkeye was here last week, how many of you got to be part of that? Raise your hands high so I can see. Man, that was some experience. And what Timber said was the reason we don't feel like we have enough, the reason we want more is because we have not defined what enough is. And that's really something to think about. So let me read this closing quote and we'll call it a day. Energy follows attention. Wherever you place your attention, that is where the energy of the system will go. Energy follows attention, and what that means is that we need to shift our attention from what we are trying to avoid toward what it is that we want to bring into reality. See, when you only see what you don't want, you are moving further and further from your good. Let us join together in our usness and practice seeing and imagining and smelling and tasting and knowing that the good that we desire is our good. It is a God-given good, and that it is beautifully blessed by the grace of God for us to achieve experiencing those high qualities of God. I think I'd like to anchor all these ideas in prayer at this time. So if I could ask the ministers and practitioners to please stand and stand around the room so that we can create a greater sense of sanctuary. Take a nice deep breath. And know, absolutely know that a gem has been given you this day. How will you carry it home? And how will you use it this week? So let's just turn within to the secret place of the Most High. Let us just step away from the busyness of conversing and center ourselves in this sacred space of prayer. I feel the love of God within me. And I know that it is that activity of life. It is everywhere present. It is a power and a presence that is greater than we are, and we can use it. We can learn to align ourselves to that energetic of it, creating an atmosphere, a tendency of our own thoughts so that our mind is one with the mind of God. Feel and sense that oneness even now. Because right here in this very room and at the center of your own being, is that which is divine, that which is holy, It is the infinite wisdom of all the universe, and it exists in every cell of the human being. It is that which restores our health, which brings our attention back to the goodness that we desire, so that we open our hearts and our minds to receive. And so right now in this room, there is a healing going on. The grace of God is pouring into our lives, and we allow ourselves to be vessels to just receive this grace. We open ourselves to be healed of any sense of separation, of any idea of being limited in any way, of any discord from the color pink to something more pleasing in our lives. And we recognize our choice. We applaud this way in which our minds can align to the mind of God, and we can think holy thoughts, and therefore we can encounter holiness in our relationships. And so there is a healing going on. There is an intelligence that is stirring within our bodies even now, so that there is a movement of life, of health, of vitality that is healing what ails us, that is removing any appearance of discord as we stand in truth. And we know that only love is real. And so I sense that activity of God in this room. I sense that healing. I sense the way each and every one of us is restored to our wholeness, and that as this is true for us, it is also true for our loved ones. For that intelligence abides in every living being. And so relationships are mended. Health is restored. The law of circulation moves in our life, so there is no limit. We consciously do not block that flow of life in any way. We just open ourselves and say, yes, yes, I am willing to receive. And that divine law responds, yes, my child. Yes, my child. It is done unto you as you believe. And so I am grateful. I feel that shift in my being, that gratitude that moves and allows me to create an atmosphere of goodness, an atmosphere that invites more goodness. It is that gratitude that gives us so much to be happy about, to remember that we are blessed and inspired and grateful and therefore big for God. I say thank you, God. Thank you, life. Thank you, Infinite Spirit, for all of these gifts and for all of that which is yet to come. We are so grateful, and I just simply release these words into that divine law, and together we say, and so it is. Amen.